One Man Revolution, episode 42. I think his name was Gizmo. Gizmo was a Mogwai, and the Mogwais turned into gremlins. And I guess it's after dark, and I fed one of them because nothing on this podcast went right. But I hacked it together as best as I could, and here you go. It's One Man Revolution, and this is your host, The Revolutionary. So what you're going to hear is me apologizing for screwing stuff up, and then me apologizing later for technical screw-ups, and there's a lot of good information, so check back for episode 43, and we'll try and do it better next time. All right, see ya. Okay, folks, here's something I don't normally do. I'm going to go ahead and edit The One Man Revolution, and I'm going to take the beginning part where I was a little bit, I guess you could say thoughtful, and I was talking about the Iraqi people. And I'm going to take that chunk, it's about 7 or 8 minutes, and I'm going to put it at the end after I'm done with President Bush. And then I'm going to put the President Bush stuff, which I've had a lot of fun with, and I actually got some energy and some anger, and I'm going to put that back up at the beginning. So if it sounds like I'm referring to things that you haven't heard, just listen to the end of the podcast. All right?
You are listening to One Man Revolution with your host, The Revolutionary.
From the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This past week, I had the honor of hosting Prime Minister Jafari, the leader of Iraq's first democratically elected government in more than a half century.
All right, I'm going to pause in here. Let's talk about this gentleman. Let's see. Ibram Jafari. He was the spokesman for the Islamic Dawha Party. Born in Karbala in 1947. He left Iraq in 1980 and lived in Iran and the UK ever since. He was educated at Mosul University as a medical doctor. And he, you know, left and then came back to Iraq after a long absence. And he is characterized by the BBC as a soft-spoken diplomat, having a soft-spoken diplomatic charm. And the Iraqis may see him as someone who is just one of those U.S.-appointed interim rulers and an outsider. This outsider spent the harsh years of Saddam Hussein's rule abroad. And remember this fact, most of the folks that could leave under the oppressive regime, just like they did with Castro in Cuba, just like they did with Franco and Baby Doc and all the other dictators that are out there that took governmental control, the folks that had the money and the folks that had the ability and the knowledge left. So who does this leave in your country? Okay, so this is an individual who left. Yes, he was elected. Yes, he is part of the new government, but he ran unopposed.
Prime Minister Jafari and I discussed our strong partnership and the dramatic progress his nation has made over the past year.
Now, when he says partnership, I'm sure he means that, you know, we are supplying 100% of his police force. We are supplying 100% of his protection. We are supplying 100% of pretty much everything day-to-day going on in Iraq. So it seems to be a pretty lopsided partnership.
Next Tuesday is the first anniversary of the moment the Iraqi people reclaimed their free and sovereign nation.
That'll be Tuesday the 28th, and the president will be going on television to appeal to the American people. I wonder how many stations will be carrying that, because as of late, the stations have not really given the president as much time as they wanted, as the president wanted, so especially in the prime time at which he would like to speak.
To mark that historic date, I will travel to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to speak to our troops and the American people about our mission in Iraq.
Why doesn't he travel to Iraq? Why doesn't he travel to Iraq and speak with the people that he has liberated? Why doesn't he travel to Iraq and speak in the cities where there are insurgents? Why doesn't he travel to Iraq and speak somewhere where there are people that oppose him? Well, what the heck? Why doesn't he come to any other city in the United States and not make everybody sign a damn piece of paper that says you are completely and utterly loyal to the president and loyal to the Republican Party before you can walk in? Of course, he's going to be standing in a room that's filled with people that are not going to say boo against the president of the United States. He's going to Fort Bragg. Fort Bragg's an army base. Fort Bragg is a place where he's going to have a lot of support because, well, gee, I don't know. They're the military, and they're working right now.
Why it remains important to our safety here at home and our two-track strategy for victory. The military...
I wonder, he's going to talk about his two-track idea for victory, and now he's going to start the backpedaling, which he is rather, in my opinion, famous for. His two-track idea of victory in this case is going to be a military and I think it's a political approach. Hold on, here we go.
Why it remains important to our safety in Iraq. Why it remains important to our safety here at home and our two-track strategy for victory. The military track of our strategy is to defeat the terrorists and continue helping Iraqis take greater responsibility for defending their freedom.
Now, notice he doesn't call them insurgents, and the president rarely uses the word insurgent. He rarely uses the term insurgent. Insurgent to him is not a word that he can get past the American people, because he got us into this thing by fighting the war on terror. And he has to point out that there are terrorists everywhere, that there's a terrorist under every rock in this country of Iraq. All right, so here we go.
The images we see on television are a grim reminder that the enemies of freedom in Iraq are ruthless killers with no regard for human life. The killers include members of Saddam Hussein's regime, criminal elements, and foreign terrorists. The terrorists know that...
All right, now, there's his first lie, by the way. He says that there are, foreign terrorists in there. Well, yeah, there's a couple of people on jihad there, but they make up less than 10% of the total, according to numbers that I read. That I've found online all over the place. So with him talking about there being this, large population or this whole group, yeah, but I it's really hard to say that. I think that these people are still just loyal people to their country, and they just want us the hell out, just like you would if the Ruskies dropped in, the Chinese dropped in, the Japs dropped in, the Nazis dropped in. If Canada dropped in, you'd want them sons of bitches out of here. All right, so let's put it here as not necessarily 100% truth, but he never speaks 100% truth anyway. Take it away, King George.
Iraq is a central front in the war on terror because they know that a stable and democratic Iraq will deal a severe blow to their ideology of oppression and fear.
Okay, their ideology of oppression and fear. Well, what's your ideology, King George? No money for... Let's see. No rights for gays. You want to bring the Bible into everything. And, these speeches are getting ridiculous, and I'm getting more and more angry.
The terrorist objective is to break the will of America and of the Iraqi people before democracy can take root.
Democracy cannot be forced. Now, for those of us that have read Marxist doctrine, for those of us that have read Communist doctrine, and for those of us that have read maybe the Little Red Book, but I'm not saying I have, and even Mein Kampf, but I'm not saying that any of those things, those are all revolutionary ideas, by the way. And as a revolutionary, of course, I'm going to be one that read them. So let's see here. He's saying that we have to force democracy. There's never a way to force a democracy on people. Either they want it or they don't want it or they don't understand it. And guess what? these people have never lived under a democracy. Or he's saying it's been, you know, it's been 50 years or whatever. No. Let's see. 50 years ago, it was the British that were attempting to impose a democracy or another form of government on the Iraqi people.
Insurgents have tried to achieve that goal before. 2 years ago, they tried to intimidate the Iraqi Governing Council and failed. Last year, they tried to delay the transfer of sovereignty to Iraq and failed. This year, they tried to stop the free Iraqi elections and failed.
I'd like to have a list of your failures, Kingy. Let's see. You started a war, and it wasn't over in 6 days, 6 weeks, or even 6 months. You failed. Let's see. Our economy's in the shitter. Gas prices are, oil prices are above $60 a barrel. That's a failure. Businesses and unemployment are unemployment's at an all at a high. It's over 6%. That's a failure. Let's see. I don't know. I'm sure I can come up with more. Give me a minute.
Now the terrorists are trying to undermine the new government and intimidate Iraqis from joining the growing Iraqi security forces. Yet democracy is moving forward, and more Iraqis are defying the terrorists by joining the democratic process.
I hope they're marching in the streets carrying signs. Oh, wait. You'll get arrested for that and be detained in prison and abused. All right, I guess you can't publicly or politically speak out.
Military strategy is clear. We will train Iraqi security forces so they can defend their freedom and protect their people, and then our troops will return home with the honor they have earned.
Oh, and that worked so well in Vietnam. Oh, you know, that worked so well in South Korea. Hey, wait a minute. Didn't that work really, really well in... it didn't work at all, ever.
The political track of our strategy is to continue helping Iraqis build the institutions of a stable democracy. The Iraqi people have taken landmark steps by voting in free elections and forming a representative government.
Okay, how free is an election if we order that they have to have it, and then we pick the people that are going to be in it, and then we say that the election is good, and we certify that the election has been counted properly, and we certify and stand there with our guns, and we stay in their country?
Prime Minister Jafari has assured me that his government is committed to meeting its deadline to draft a new constitution for a free Iraq. Then the Constitution will be submitted to the Iraqi people for approval, and new elections will be held to choose a fully constitutional government.
Now, a Constitution doesn't, I mean, obviously, Kingy, a Constitution doesn't really, you know, guarantee anything. I mean, look how you're raping and pillaging it right now. Let's see, you're talking about renewing the Patriot Act. Oh, wait, you ran away from that one because that dog won't hunt. Let's see, some of your little cronies out there are trying to put in a 22nd Amendment change so that you can stay president for the rest of your natural goddamn life. Let's see, I don't think that one's going to pass. Oh, wait, I think you want to add an amendment to that Constitution so that you can have Arnold Schwarzenegger, a naturalized U.S. citizen, because he's lived here over 35 years, become president. And that's an attempt to rape the Constitution. Oh, yeah, you want to remove the First Amendment through that Patriot Act. You want to kill the Fourth Amendment, which is also in the Patriot Act. Oh, you want to suppress pretty much the ability for people to bear arms. Although we haven't really talked about that much, but part of the Patriot Act, part of the committees out there are making sure that everything is registered, which I'm sorry, I think that every man should own at least two or three unregistered guns, just because. Why should anybody know what you have and, you know, to protect the privacy of your own home? I don't own any guns because I have small children, and maybe once the small child is out and moved on, maybe I will get some weapons, and I want to at least have the opportunity to own a weapon of mass destruction. You know, well, heck, but, well, neither here nor there. So the Constitution doesn't guarantee you anything, O King George, when you ignore it.
These are monumental tasks for the new democracy of Iraq, and the free world will continue to stand behind the Iraqi people. This past week...
Now, notice he says that we are the entire free world. He's like, well, the free world will stand behind the Iraqi people. Well, there's a line, because let's see. I think Halliburton is standing right behind the Iraqi people. You know, just directly behind, holding on to their shoulders and grunting really loudly. And they're doing the same thing to us. I mean, this thing is now looking like it's going to cost us between $280 and $300 billion by the time it's all said and done. But that's, you know, again, neither here nor there. Back to you.
More than 80 countries and international organizations came together in Brussels to discuss how to help Iraqis provide for their security and rebuild their country. And next month, donor countries will meet in Jordan to discuss Iraqi reconstruction.
Notice nobody wants to meet in Iraq. You know, they'll meet in Brussels, they'll meet in Jordan. You know, Jordan's close enough to the Middle East, but it's still far enough away that they don't have to actually be in Iraq. You know, they'll meet in Washington, they'll meet in, he's going to Fort Bragg. You know, heck, this sounds like a really great thing.
Our nation's mission in Iraq is difficult, and we can expect more.
And it's no longer clear.
More tough fighting in the weeks and months ahead. Yet I'm confident in the outcome. The Iraqi people are growing in optimism and hope.
Notice he didn't say what the outcome was. I'm confident in the outcome. In what outcome? In the outcome that eventually the people will somehow sort of... Nothing here is as emphatic as he has been in the past. This boy is going to go on television tomorrow and he's going to and yuck it up and smile and give his little routine again. And people are going to buy it again. I mean, it's ridiculous. I can't understand how people can be manipulated like this.
They understand that the violence is only a part of the reality in Iraq. Each day, Iraqis are exercising new freedoms that they were denied for decades. Schools, hospitals, roads, and post offices are being built.
Okay, so those are new freedoms, the schools, hospitals, and post offices. Yeah.
To serve the needs of all Iraqis. Increasing numbers of Iraqis are overcoming their fears and working actively to defeat the insurgents. And every...
He said the I word.
Iraqi who chooses a side of freedom has chosen the winning side.
See, and now he's saying you have to choose the side of freedom. That brings us back to the whole idea that in the beginning there when I was making all those boring comments. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cut all my boring comments. I'm going to put it at the end. And I'm going to put this stuff at the beginning because I have a hell of a lot more energy when I'm yelling at the president.
Americans can be proud of all that we and our coalition partners.
I am ashamed. And I am sad. I am not proud of this executive branch's ideas and ideals. I didn't vote for you. I do not like you. I do not want you in office. I think you should fire your cabinet. I think you should resign. And I hope that somebody talks about impeaching your ass.
Have accomplished in Iraq. Our country has been tested before, and we have a long history of resolve and faith in the cause of freedom.
Okay, we've been tested before. Would that have been the British? Let's see, would that have been the Civil War? The War of 1812? Let's see, Spanish-American War? Which ones tested our idea? See, we fought against somebody to get our own democracy. Nobody imposed democracy on us. This is the problem with his line of reasoning. You can't impose democracy.
Now we will see that cause to victory in Iraq. A democratic Iraq will be a powerful setback to the terrorists who seek to harm our nation. A democratic Iraq will be a great triumph in the history of liberty. And a democratic Iraq will be a source of peace for our children and grandchildren.
And no matter what you say and how many times you say it, a democratic Iraq is not going to happen when you're forcing them to do it. You're welcome.
Thank you for listening.
And like I listened. I listened a little bit too closely, George, and I noticed that you, I'm sorry, King George, and I noticed that you were a lying sack of crap. And I know that it's very difficult for people to, you know, see a liberal who gets this, you know, upset and pissed off about, you know, what's going on. You probably think you're listening to that, that big fat guy who takes a lot too many OxyContin. You know who I'm talking about. You know, I don't understand where this group of people get the idea that they you know, have this knowledge from God or from somewhere else in the world that they are the ones that know what the world should be. To me, I think that is completely fascism or imperialism. And there's no place in this world for either spot right now. I mean, you know, we're spread way too thin. You know, if the president wanted to weaken the United States, it's real easy. So let's send all of our military into a war zone and not allow us to get any more people to join the military. You know, Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, all of them have the lowest recruiting rates that they've had in years. Why? Because people don't want to die. I mean, that's a simple thing. I mean, you look at this. Since I spoke about the numbers, I think it's up to nearly 1,900 people that have died in Iraq. A very smart man here in Orlando said that when it hits 2,000, it might be the breaking point. Well, over the past weekend, six of them were women. When your daughters start coming home in body bags, there's a problem. And my daughter is not going to do that. I will help her move to another country if this is still going on when she reaches the age, which it may still be. It may still be fighting this for, and I read this today, decades to come. Decades. That means, you know, I got a 5-year-old that in 10 years she'll be 15, and then 3 years after that, because of the low numbers, you know, she'll be 18 and probably drafted into the friggin' military. Why? Because this one man changed the way that the United States looked, and we'll have to defend ourselves from everybody. Everybody that's out there. And since we're spread so thin right now, it'd be easy for people to start walking all over us. So you did us no service, King George, by doing what you've done. And who knows how the heck this happened, but I somehow didn't record my beginning part of my comments. So we're going to catch the one-man revolution in the middle here, where I start talking about the ridiculousness of Donald Rumsfeld and some of the other folks. I must have whacked the keyboard or something. All right, so as is the case with sometimes with technology, sometimes it turns around and bites you on the ass. All right, so I'll catch you folks later, and here's that sappy, thoughtful section that I promised you. Is being said by King George and his staff, and how things go back and forth and back and forth. I mean, you look back to the beginning of the war, you know, in February of 2003, I guess this was. Yeah, February of 2003. Let's see, Donald Rumsfeld. Why does this man still have a job? It's unknowable how long this conflict could last. It could last 6 days, 6 weeks. I doubt 6 months. Then General Richard Myers, at a breakfast, says, "What we'd like to have is a short conflict. Iraq is much weaker than they were back in the 90s when its forces were routed from Kuwait." And then in March, Paul Wolfowitz, in a speech to veterans, said, "The Iraqi people understand what this crisis is about. Like the people of France in the 1940s, they view us as their hoped for liberator." Well, their liberator is sitting on top of their necks and rubbing and letting them roll around in feces and letting loose dogs on them and doing all of these other horrible things because they are prisoners, because they are the ones that we throw away, because they are the ones that currently have no power. And it's really easy when you have an M16 or a 1911 Colt on your hip and the other person is naked and does not speak your language. It's very, very easy to control them. First of all, they value their honor and they won't talk about what's going to happen. So there is a big problem. After the war, in March of the same year, President Bush was in the Oval Office, and he gave a speech to the nation, and I think we all remember that speech. "A campaign on the harsh terrain of a nation as large as California could be longer and more difficult than some predict." Well, I guess he was, you know, throwing in his little, well, maybe this isn't going to be as easy as it's going to be, but, you know, just one day afterwards, the, Rumsfeld comes back and says, "The confusion of Iraqi officials is growing. Their ability to see what is happening on the battlefield, to communicate with their forces and control their country is slipping away. The regime is starting to lose control of their country." And then by the 27th, with Tony Blair by his side, King George says, "However long it takes, that's the answer to your question, and that's what you've got to know. It isn't a matter of a timetable." And the reason I bring up timetable, he says it's a matter of victory. And he brings up timetables, and his entire group brings up timetables. And recently, they made, I think this was over the weekend, it was a comment was made that said, well, we don't want to give our timetable for when we're going to leave, because then all the insurgents, these are just people who are fighting against the oppression, in my opinion, the insurgents will then just wait. And once we are gone, they will swoop down and, you know, refill the government with their people again. Well, let's talk a little bit more about other things that the Iraqi people are unwilling to do. Well, they're unwilling to talk openly about sexual harassment. Of course, this is because of the whole idea of honor. A woman or a man would prefer to die rather than jeopardize their family reputation. Also, a lot of the prisoners lost confidence in the media because they think they work for American intelligence. Because we are in control of everything they do right now. One prisoner said that he would not talk unless he was outside of Iraq. Then he would say everything. Isn't that amazing? He said that he wouldn't talk within his own country because he was afraid that what he would say would basically put him back in prison or put him back somewhere where he didn't want to be. Others, you know, basically another point is that some prisoners don't find any benefit in publishing their testimonies. They find it too political or media trading, and they don't want anything that'll take away from them returning to their dignity or putting things right in Iraq again. You know, it's been being violated, in their opinion, by military occupation. You know, it's pretty bad. You know, it's pretty bad. I mean, there are so many testimonies, and there's an entire page of testimonies here, and I'll put this on the site, and this was published back on the 28th of last year, a year ago in May, and I doubt that a lot of this has changed. You know, they just, you know, I don't think these things can change just because of the type of people that we are and the type of people that we're sending over there. More, every one of those pictures that I saw from Abu Ghraib had someone smiling in it that was an American soldier, giving the pointing fingers, giving the peace sign, smoking a cigarette, you know, smiling about what they were doing because they felt what they were doing was completely and utterly right. You know, I mean, it's just not right. You know, so what I'm going to do now, I'm going to switch gears, is I'm going to play through the president's radio address. It's about 3 minutes, and I'm going to go ahead and run through it, and then we'll get moving on with the rest of the One Man Revolution. This is the one man from One Man Revolution. To contact One Man Revolution, you can email onemanrevolution@gmail.com or on Skype at The Revolutionary. That's TheRevolutionary. Or just visit the website at http://onemanrevolution.org. And I'm out.